Hello and welcome back to Chai Can't Even. I'm Blake Smith and I'm here again today with Eldred Spain to pick up on our conversation about his journey in Community of Christ. Of course, that started with the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but now continues on in Community of Christ. And I'm just so glad to be able to be here with him again to continue in that conversation. So welcome back, Eldred.
Thank you.
So one of the things that I hear from folks in the older generations of the church, I hear it more often than I'd like to admit. They say to me, this isn't the church I grew up in. I'm interested to hear what your response to that is.
My response is, when I was a young person, I heard about the Zion. Zion would be centered in Independence, Missouri, and the regions round about might take in part of Kansas and a whole lot of Missouri. I didn't know the counties in Kansas, but I knew all the counties in Missouri, so it would probably take about half of the 114 counties in the state, and a chunk maybe as far west as Topeka, Kansas, but it would be that area, and that would be Zion. And I grew up in my younger years convinced, because that's what people were telling me.
That's what everybody said.
And I was trying to learn what was real. And then I read the scriptures, and I read there are three different clusters of thought about Zion. One is about a city of refuge. One is about a city set on a hill where it can be observed. And one is, it's like salt. The salt savors everything and changes everything, even if the salt loses itself. And when I could accept that change in my thought, I wanted a broader thought on all the things, not just on that one. But that was one of the triggers early on. I tried to write a song when I was in high school. And I keep it just to remind me of who I was then. My heart doth burn within me when I catch the vision high of the angels from Almighty God descending from the sky. And we're supposed to meet the angels in midair. I wrote a song about that. It's not something I even hang on to a tenth of a percent now, but it's where I was. And if the changes in the church can offer me a better view of what it means to minister in the world, I'm ready to change.
Amen. No matter.
Yeah, because I've been there. I went back to my home congregation one time and they were discussing a particular section of the Doctrine and Covenants that would kind of talk down about some people. And my statement to them was, well, I take that when I do some of the things that they might have done, that means I'm denying my God, and I'm denying God's Son, Jesus, who is my way. And they said, oh, no, no, it doesn't refer to you. It refers to them. And I just cried. Some changed and some couldn't change.
Right.
and our only hope is to change. Well, a member of the presidency in our home one time came to do some things in the Phoenix area, and he preferred to come and stay with us than to go with some of the other places he could have gone. And Duane said, there's only one thing that will never change. Only one. And he had my attention. He said, the only thing that will never change is that there will always be change.
Good point.
And I'm with him all the way. There will always be change. I'm not a finished product at my young 91 years. I've still got some things to work on.
Well, I hope you have plenty of time to work on them. I'm not sure that I could name any that you need to work on, but.
No, I'm the one that's got to work on them.
Right.
And that's one of the things I learned in counseling. I don't change because you tell me what to do differently. I change because I see a need for better. As the description is, gosh, I think it's T. Ed Barlow's book, chapter 6, talks about some things in small groups and how change occurs in small groups. And he said, and if you try to tell somebody how to change, you're guaranteeing that they won't, because they dig their heels in and say, but I'm okay now. I just want to, I'm okay now. You're digging your heels in and you won't change because you're okay now. You gotta get the idea that there's something better yet. And don't cause anybody to dig in their heels.
Well, that's a great segue into my next question. And as I listen to you share, Eldred, it's such a blessing. And I just love hearing it. And I know that there are so many more things that I want to ask you. We didn't really talk much about your 21 years of working for the church in appointment. You mentioned the appointment. I wanted to ask you, why in the world would you move to Phoenix? We're here recording this episode, having this conversation in Phoenix, where it's been as hot as 119. So, those kinds of things. But what I want to ask is, what is that next thing that we'll miss if we dig in our heels? I mean, what is it that you see? You've had such an amazing set of life experiences that bring you to this point, and you talk about wanting to be a lifelong learner and still more to learn and to see. And what is it that you hope for the church? What is that that's just beyond the horizon? As you sense our moving forward, or what do you hope is beyond the horizon for us?
Well, I hope for my own life the same way I hope for the church, that each day I'll meet somebody new, or meet something new about the people that I already think I know, and that together we'll find something somehow to help people who aren't already among us. I want to be a help, and that's what I want with the church. I want for us to get to know each other better. Not the Sunday morning personality, but what kind of food you like, what sort of entertainment helps nurture your soul. What are the things that are hidden inside? that if they're outside, can be liberated or liberating. Let me just give you something. During the years in San Francisco, from my spring of my third grade until the early fall of my eighth grade, it overflowed to Carthage even for the last year. I was abused by two men multiple times. One was the stepfather, who was a decent stepfather, not close, but decent, till he lost his temper. And when he lost his temper, he had no control over himself. And I was recipient of some of those episodes. When I was a teenager, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th grades, I had a temper that I could control my behavior, but I couldn't control my feelings of the temper. Sometimes there might be a trigger, sometimes I wouldn't even know what triggered. So I made a list of the 10 things that I should do in my life so that I could really be liberated with people my own age. And learn to control my temper was number one on the list. Made me mad when I lost my temper. Then I married a woman who was unbelievably loving and accepting and tender. And you have to ask the girls whether she was tender with them. But they both resemble some of her traits of reaching out to help people. And I was probably 25, maybe 30 years into that when I heard in my mind, I reheard Cecil Ettinger, but I also heard some others saying, I knew somebody that I held something against, and I had to go build a bridge with that person. And so in the 80s, and here I am approaching or at 50 in age, I started trying to figure out how I could get a hold of those two people and build a bridge with them where I had fences and say, whatever I might have done, however it might have been something I wasn't aware of, I would like to apologize for anything complicit and see if we can build a bridge. And I started looking for those two people to build bridges with. And from the time I got serious about looking, I've never lost my temper since. And that's been close to 40 years or so.
That's incredible.
Forgive seven times? No, not seven times. 70 times seven. Just keep on. Forgive. It works.
Thank you so much for sharing that vulnerable story and words of deep, deep wisdom from your experience. That My next question was, what advice would you share with our listeners? And you got some more? Okay. But I want to just say that that in itself is so powerful and something, a word I think that we really need to hear today in our current context. So thank you for that. But go ahead, give us some more.
I'm going to build a whole worship service about it for my home congregation or for the mission center or whatever I would like to build it. But anyway, Carolyn asked a question when we were being interviewed for appointment. What do I need to do to make my life differently so we can fit in? Clifford Cole's response was, "We're not asking you to come to change. We're asking you to come because of who you are." Okay, Carolyn and I were a team. And so in appointment, we were a team. We not only went to seminary together in the same classes, but we modeled team teaching, dialogue sermons, couple counseling, whatever. We were about being a team. That was helpful to some people. I'm not sure that it was helpful to everyone. But anyway, we were. And in our various workshops and occasions when we had opportunity, we said, "You have two ears and one mouth. Do the math."
I've heard that one before. I like that.
Okay. Listen, listen, listen.
Another one I heard was the mouth was made to shut, the ears weren't.
I love it. Hadn't heard that one. Yeah. But if I were to advise anybody, listen more than you speak. Now, when you speak, Howard Kleinbell had a growth formula, C plus C equals G. And then he asked us to define the C and the C and the G.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me the answer.
Oh, I am.
Okay, all right, good.
First is caring. One C is for caring. The other C is for confronting. Confronting not toward telling the other person what they should do, but confronting by being honest about what your experience is as you're together. Confronting without caring is experienced as rejection. Caring without confronting is the same as salving over a sore, but not treating the cause of the sore. It doesn't work by itself. It requires both. But the confronting has to be in I messages, not in you messages. And if I could get something across to some of our young people, confronting by telling somebody what they need to do, you're just driving them up away or having them dig in their heels. Don't do it. I heard a mother say to the son, "I believe you know that when you do that, I become angry." World difference between saying, "You make me angry." A world of difference. You have the choice now. You know that if you do that, I become angry. You can choose whether to do it. If you want to make me angry, do it. But not because you've done it, it's because I become angry when you do it. That's me, not you. And the sun turned out right. Yeah. So, yeah, it's another thing. I messages, they're so much more important.
That's great. Thank you so much for that. So, is there anything that I haven't asked? I mean, I'm sure you just have more stories and more stories, but is there anything I haven't asked that you would like to share?
This is something I carried from ministry into my more recent years teaching. At the beginning of the year, when I'm teaching a government class, I'm supposed to make citizens, good citizens, out of these kids. I proved to them mathematically why it wouldn't happen. I did the math, ahead of time, so I kind of had the idea of what the numbers were. And I said, to my students, high school students, you had to take my class. They didn't have any choice about whether to take it. They had a choice about which government teacher to have, but they didn't have a choice whether. It's only who. So I said to them, every year you live 8,760 hours, except it's leap year, you added 24 more. So by the time you've reached your 18th birthday, you will have lived somewhere over 157,000 hours. Now I will get you 180 days times 55 minutes. I will get you about 150, 160 hours, assuming you're not out for a track meet, you're not out for a music production. We don't have a convocation. If I get you all the time, I'll only get you about 1/1000th of your first 18 years, and I'll never see you again after class ends. Never. And I'm supposed to make good citizens out of you? 1 hour out of 1,000? It's not possible unless. And then they listen to the unless. Unless we become friends. And if we become friends, every hour in here will change you. I believe it. If we're friends, we change each other. They changed me, and I changed them. I finally had an exclamation mark on whether that was working, because in the last couple of years, I had a boy. I believe his name was Ricky. He sat back in the far left corner of the room. I had the room set up so nobody was more than the third seat back in a row or column. Everybody was closer to the action than a sixth row might be in some of the classroom setups. But he sat back in that corner. He had lunch first and then came into four, what we called 4B, which was the 4th hour class after the first lunch. And some days he didn't show up. He was a drop in. And he would show up sometimes. And if he did show up, one of three things might describe kind of what was going on for him during that 4B class. His eyes might be red. His eyes might be rolling around in his head and not be red, or he may have his head down on the desk. Nice kid. Never participated in class because he was always kind of just not, I didn't think, fully present even when he dropped in. Till the middle of the year, he dropped out. He became a dropout, and I didn't see him again. Then left teaching in 76, went to work for the church. And in 78, we were elsewhere. We were living in the Denver area, and we came back to Phoenix for our older daughter's wedding. Barb and Rob got married in Phoenix, so we had to be here. And we were penniless when I got married. I couldn't even buy a new pair of socks. I just wore the socks that I had, and I wore the shoes that I had. And I said, well, at least today I can buy some new shoes for my daughter's wedding.
Wow.
So we're over at a mall. It was called Christown Mall. It kind of still exists. It's one of the malls that survived. Walking down between the stores and the little passageway, a young man came up to me, Mr. Spain. And of course, Barb and Carolyn looked, and Barb rolled her eyes because she says, it didn't matter where we went, there was always somebody, Mr. Spain. Well, this kid dressed in a suit, had his hair trimmed, shaved, just neat young guy, probably about 21. He said, Mr. Spain, I want you to know I've finished my high school. I'm clean. I've gotten off of this stuff. I've got a nice job. I'm put together, and I knew you'd want to know. I still cry when I think of that.
That is a precious moment, isn't it?
I didn't know if he got anything out of the class, but he did. He knew we were friends. Yeah.
I have no doubt that there are many stories like that. And while I am personally thankful that you made a shift to the church to be a blessing to so many in other ways, I wish we had more teachers like you in our school systems, because my guess is you had a lot of friends and touched a lot of lives in both ways. Kind of, I couldn't help, as you were telling the story, to think of the line from the musical Wicked, because I knew you, I have been changed for good. And I know that in our short time of getting to be engaged in conversations just over the last couple of months, I am so glad that I've had the opportunity to become your friend, or I hope so. I know you have certainly become mine, and to hear your stories, and I can't thank you enough, not only for doing this episode of Chai Can't Even with me, but just for all that you have done for so many people over all these years, in ways that I'm so glad that you had that opportunity to run into that young man in the mall. I know that from my life in ministry over the last number of years, you don't always know how things turned out. And so those little gems are so important. Not because we need them, because we don't do it for the accolades, but just that it's kind of, I think, kind of God's way of saying, you see, you were in there for a reason. So.
I know some people who became teachers. My first two student teachers were people who decided to teach government, and they came back. One had been the student body president, the other had been the loser in that race for student body president, but they came back the same year and both taught government. Yeah.
Let's see.
And I'm still good friends with the student who graduated in the class of 69. He was a sophomore on my cross country class, cross country team in 66. And he and the other two then sophomores who were on that team were the ones that invited me to come to their 50th class reunion. So I'm still hooked up on Facebook with kids who were on that 66 cross country team and 69 graduating class. Yeah, it's neat in some ways. Would like to have stayed in teaching. But then I wouldn't have known Bunda and Jenny Chiboy. And we've been good friends, Carolyn and me, with both of them since 1988. That was the conference that I taught a class for the international leaders before or after the conference. Must have been the class of the conference of 86, because I was still working on the Christian ed materials at that time, and tried to present what the materials based in terms of the teachings that were kind of at the heart of what they wanted to get across to the kids. And then I said, it's all on Western culture that we use the illustrations. What would you have to do to this to take these principles into your culture? Bunda's hand was up in 1 second. And he said, there are five things would have to happen. And from that moment on, I wanted to know Bunda.
He's a good man.
Yep.
He's a good man, another good friend.
Yep. And Jenny, I get notes from Jenny multiple times a year just to see how it's going with the senior minister. Yeah. We've got to get close with each other. And not close enough to tell them what to do, but close enough for us to tell ourselves what we need to do to get even closer. We've got to get close with people who are not members of our faith. I spent over 17 years as president of the Arizona Interfaith Movement, and we have in there Muslim and Jewish, of course, but also Hindu and Baha'i and oh gosh, who all lots of faiths. And made a difference, because what I understand my Christianity to mean when expressed there helped even in that group of leaders. And another thing, if I were to talk with the young people, if I had any high school kids at our congregation, I teach the high school class.
Oh, goodness.
I just love to have them. But if I were to teach anything, it would be, in my perspective, it's more important to be Christian than to be a Christian.
Say a little more about that.
In Genesis, not in Genesis, in Luke, Jesus is reading from the scroll. I think it's 4:18 and 19. I'm not sure about the numbers. reading from the scroll, and then he hands the scroll back, and then he sits down to teach, which isn't a bad idea today. And he sat down and said, "Today is this fulfilled in your hearing?" And what is it? It's not wearing a badge of "I belong to." It's feed the hungry, visit the sick and afflicted, take care of the fatherless, take care of the widows. That's being Christian. You can be a Christian and not do any of that. More important to be Christian than to be a Christian.
I like that. I like that. We've got a lot of self-proclaimed Christians in this world.
That don't appear to be doing. They may be doing something that's hidden, but they certainly don't lift it up as a way of life to be emulated.
I saw a sign the other day that said, "I'm a better Christian than most Christians I know, and I'm an atheist."
One of the people in our interfaith was an atheist, and oh my goodness. But we built it all around the golden rule in Arizona Interfaith. In fact, we're the ones that got Arizona legislature to declare Arizona as a golden rule state. And we now have, I think it's approaching 14 cities that have declared themselves golden rule cities.
Really? How about that?
Got to change the way we relate.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Eldred, thank you so much for taking the time out of your afternoon to sit with me and share some more stories. I know that this will be a delight for all those who get a chance to hear it, and we could probably do a few more episodes because I'm sure that you have so many gifts of wisdom and just experiences that are a delight and would be so helpful for us to hear. But I appreciate you taking the time to do this for today and to be with me and just to get to sit in your home and hear your stories has been incredible. So thank you for being with me today.
Thank you. It's great to just kind of reflect on what is life. Thank you.
You've been listening to an episode of Chai Can't Even with me, your host, Blake Smith, and special guest, Eldred Spain. And I want to give a special thanks to all of our listeners here at Project Zion. As always, we invite you to come back and join us again in the future. Until then, you can find more episodes of Chai Can't Even at projectzionpodcast.org. You can also, of course, find us on all your favorite podcast platforms. Starting next week, you'll be able to find those at faithunfilteredpodcast.org. We're changing our name and we're adding new content, so we hope that you'll join us. Until next time, I hope you have a blessed day. Thanks for spending some of it with us. Take care.